Welcome to the Nobody Guide to Life, where we provide tips and tools for personal growth, personal development, and your spiritual journey that you can use right now in your everyday life. I'm J.A. Ploska. You can always find out more at thenobodyguidetolife.com. Thank you so much for joining us. There are teachings we often like to talk about in theory, but when we actually have to practice them, well, that's where a lot of us fall away. I think a really great example of that is forgiveness. We think it's great when people say they forgave someone, or maybe we tell people to forgive and forget, but sometimes that can be really difficult to do ourselves when the time comes. But my guest today has some real insight into the nature and power of forgiveness. Anna Holub teaches forgiveness and recovery from addiction as a counselor, author, poet, and educator. Her background in peace studies and dispute resolution has made her an expert in the field of forgiveness and reconciliation, and she was recently honored as a champion of forgiveness by the Worldwide Forgiveness Alliance. Anna works with individuals, couples, at-risk families, hospice patients, and nonprofits. And she also works with prison inmates and juvenile offenders in the area of forgiveness. And she has an 8-week course called Forgive and Be Free of Your Addictions. She is an international speaker and teacher whose books include Forgive and Be Free and The Edges Are Friendly. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. And, you know, forgiveness is such an interesting area. It's, you know, I think a lot of people have other training in coaching or in counseling, and forgiveness is a piece of what they do, but it seems to be such the dominant focus of your practice. And I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you come to this area of forgiveness as a specialty?
Sure. I think you're right that forgiveness itself, even what does it mean when we say that word, it can be different for each person.
Right.
And so for me, I feel like I was born into it in a way now that I look back.
Right.
Because when I was growing up, my mother had increasingly disturbing and detrimental mental illness.
Right.
So as I got older, by the time I was a teenager, it was getting to be pretty clear that there was something really wrong in the family, and it was around my mom, and she would go up and then she would go down, and she didn't always make sense, you know, even though she was also a wonderful person and a good mom. It's just that she started to lean on me emotionally a lot, and
right.
Then I got super stressed, and we kind of flipped roles. And I know this happens for a lot of people, which is why I talk about it now. I never used to talk about it, but I do now because other people can relate to it, I think. So when I turned 17 and 18 and it was time to go away from the home and I was going to go to college, I went as far away as I could because
right.
I just needed to escape. And I ended up going from New Jersey to California thinking, oh, great, I have a whole new life. Well, what I didn't realize at the time was I was taking everything with me. You know, I was taking myself with me. And
right. Then
even during that time, her medical situation was getting worse. And by the time I was 23, she killed herself. And I was pregnant at the time with a baby that I had chosen to keep, but I wasn't married.
Right.
And I was in a very precarious situation already before my mom died. So I was 8.5 months pregnant and she killed herself.
Wow.
And I was only 23 and I didn't have any money. I didn't have a dad. I had dropped out of school. I had done a whole bunch of things in my life trying to change myself in some way. And that didn't really work. I just kind of went deeper down into a tunnel of my own distress and grief over her death. And also this weird feeling of relief that
right.
she wasn't around anymore. But then, of course, I felt a lot of guilt for feeling that. So I was like a whole mess of craziness myself.
Right.
And I had a baby within a couple of weeks and needed to put all my attention into being a good mom, which I didn't really know how to do. And my own mother had said, this life is not worth living. I can't do it. I'm gone.
Right.
At the very time when I needed a mom.
Right.
So that experience in my early 20s, I had to put my own grief on hold. I just buried it for quite a while. I would say 8 years, while I just focused on loving my daughter, being a single mom, putting one foot in front of the other. I did have help, thank goodness, and I did have a deepening experience of my own spirituality. So those two things saved me, really.
Right.
And my love for my daughter.
You know, right.
When I had a baby, I couldn't believe how much love there was.
Right.
And that kept me afloat in a lot of ways. Otherwise, I think I really could have easily lost it as well. So it took me a while to then begin to realize I needed to go back in and really deal with some of the stuff that I had put on hold. So when my daughter was about 8, I began going to some workshops and, you know, doing some meditation practices. I had had a practice before that, but I got deeper into it and I realized, all right, I really need to handle this. I
right.
can't just keep it under a big burlap bag for the rest of my life. So then it took me another 8 years to find the forgiveness work that ended up really helping me so much. And I discovered the work of my mentor, Colin Tipping. Colin wrote a book called Radical Forgiveness. He's also written other books. And I went to a workshop of his and he just said, all right, you know, go straight for it. Or I decided
right.
going straight for this grief around my mom. And I couldn't believe how much energy I moved.
Wow.
And not only me, but the whole room. I mean, I'd been to some workshops and things. I was even a breath worker by then. And the breath really moves a lot as well. But I was pretty amazed. And I felt so much better. And that was just the beginning. And so I ended up studying with Colin. And I also ended up, after that, getting into the main spiritual text that inspires me, which is called A Course in Miracles.
Right.
Some of the listeners may be familiar with that text. So I just went deeper and deeper and deeper into it and ended up starting to work with people and helping them. And it has helped me so much. I really don't know how or who I would be without this forgiveness process, because I'm a happy person, even though I went through all of this. And it's not the only thing that I went through, but it's one of the big seminal moments. There have been other things that have been pretty awful as well. And everybody has something, or some people have a lot that
right.
they go through. And my heart is with you. I want to let you know my heart is with you. And this particular forgiveness process, it's not the traditional model that we think of. So maybe now is an okay time for me to say, what's the difference, you know, between this form of forgiveness and other kinds?
Well, wait, when you say that, do you mean, are we going back to that first moment you had with Colin Tipping and what happened to you there? Or are we talking about now the kind of forgiveness model that you've developed? What's the context?
Yeah, so both of those models are complementary.
Okay.
And also the model that comes from the Hawaiian tradition called Ho'oponopono.
Right.
I would say the radical forgiveness model that Colin does, the Ho'oponopono, and my model, which is kind of a mixture of what Colin taught me, what I learned from Course in Miracles, and also what I learned from being a mediator and somebody who has studied peace education.
Right.
So I put all that into the cauldron and stir, and the mixture that comes out is the kind that I teach. I sometimes call it ecstatic forgiveness.
Okay.
But they're all complementary in the sense that they are not a traditional way that we think about forgiveness.
Okay. Yeah. So take us into that a little bit. And if you can, maybe explain those, how those other roads like Ho'oponopono and radical forgiveness, for people who may not know, So take us into your path and explain that to us a little bit, because it sounds really fascinating. Take us into ecstatic forgiveness then.
Sure. Well, one of the things that I love about it is that anybody, anywhere, no matter what your background or what your thought about life is or what culture you come from, any of that, no matter what that looks like for you, you can still use this process. You can use it with a religion or with no religion. And the one thing you do need, though, is some kind of connection to something that is bigger and kinder,
right,
than our own individual sense of a mind. So some people call that God. Some people call it spirit. Some people call it nature.
Right.
It doesn't really matter what we call it. But for me, when I teach this, I say you need to have at least be open to the possibility that there is something much bigger than ourselves as this body, as an individual unit, and that that thing that's bigger is kind and loving. If you can open yourself to that, it's possible. Some people already know that's true for themselves, but other people are like really not clear on it. And as long as there's a possibility that this could be true, then we can start going more deeply into it.
Right.
In our traditional view of forgiveness, usually we learn that pretty early, and we learn it by osmosis. It's not like somebody, at least for a lot of us, in my culture anyway, which is the U.S. Western industrialized culture, I would say. It's not like somebody sits us down and when we're kids and say, okay, this is what forgiveness is.
Right.
Maybe, but maybe not. But what we do learn is we start playing with other kids and we start trying to get along on the playground, right? And kids will shove each other, push each other, an accident could happen, and then the adults get involved and they teach us about saying I'm sorry. So that usually happens around 4 or 5 years old, when we're developmentally old enough to understand what does that even mean.
Right.
So we're on the playground, we're in preschool or kindergarten, and the adults start saying, okay, for the perpetrator, you need to say you're sorry, you need to say you're sorry. And then for the other kid is supposed to say, well, it's okay.
Right.
That's sometimes as much about forgiveness as we ever learn. Now, for people who grow up going to church and reading the Christian Bible, they may learn a lot more about a certain kind of forgiveness. But for many people, they don't necessarily live it. What we live is this little interaction on the playground. And a lot of times kids are very flexible and it is okay and they forget it and they move on.
Right.
But as we get older, tougher things can happen and they kind of start to stick. So if we just use the traditional forgiveness model, which says, oh, well, you know, something awful happened to me, and gee, I need to forgive it, I think that would be a good idea. And we might even think in our minds, okay, I'm going to do it now. We don't really know how to do it, for one thing. There's no real map on how to do it. And also, if we still think of ourselves as being a victim to what happened, like that person was awful, that person did something awful to me, and even though that person is still awful, I'm going to forgive them. It's kind of like we put this blanket on the top of it and then we think we can move on.
Right.
And there's a beauty in that. And yet it's possible to go a lot deeper than that. And that's when we start going into this new model, whether it is called radical forgiveness or ecstatic forgiveness. Basically, it is a recognition that we are not only a personality in a body. We are much faster than that. We have an eternal essence, which is mystical, and it is mysterious, and it's very, very powerful. So when we take a look at these things, if we keep ourselves in a victim role, even subtly in our minds, we will not thoroughly heal. So we really need to get a lot bigger in our whole way of thinking about this to say, all right, what is this experience that I had, even if it was horrible and awful, like my mother killing herself, I had to do that for myself. What is it doing in my life as a soul? Did I incarnate here consciously to heal certain things
right.
that my mother's suicide will bring up in me so that I can heal them? Now that completely flips the whole thing on its head, because then it's not like I'm saying my mother's suicide was my fault or that someone is a sinner or that it's her fault. What I'm saying is we are eternal beings of light. So if that's the case, what is this doing in my life? What do I need to awaken into? What is there that I want to heal? And one of the things that I found out personally for myself and using this very deeply for myself, which I do all the time and I still do it, is to take a look at my own fear of insanity. I mean, here's my mother going through a crack in her ability to be sane to the point where she actually took her life. So that reflection to me, if I really want to go very deep with it, I need to go, wow, you know, what about how do I feel about sanity, or where is my sanity? How can I be deeply at peace, which is sanity, no matter what happens in the world around me, even this? So we all have our version of that. Where is it where we're scared and feeling weak and not loving ourselves and the things that happen around us, or even the ways that we need to forgive ourselves for things that we've done? These fears will arise, and these fears are the things that forgiveness helps us to heal by letting go.
Well, it sounds like it's a very, it brings some of the responsibility, or all the responsibility, back on ourselves. So instead of playing in a victim role, you actually empower the situation and see how it can help you, you know, not only get past a situation, but grow and thrive because the situation happened, by taking complete responsibility for the healing process. Is that sort of the idea there?
Yes, it is. And I want to say that it is not the same as then victim blaming. Mm. A lot of people hear that and they go, well, but you're just, now you're blaming the victim.
Yes. Or,
and I'm saying what this is actually takes us beyond blaming altogether.
Right.
So in Course in Miracles, it states that we need to walk off the battlefield. To me, that's a very powerful statement.
Right.
And I meditate on it all the time because there's so much battlefield to be had.
Right.
In this 3D world. And we can chew on it on many, many levels at the same time, most of which we're not usually aware of. But the more we get into this and the more letting go happens, which is the act of forgiveness, is this deep soul level letting go process, which is what I teach. Really, the biggest thing that I teach is I teach people how to do this releasing.
Right.
Because it's a great idea, but until you actually feel it in your body, and you feel it in our emotions and our mind, and we link to spirit, then we get a visceral, direct experience. And then once we do this letting go, we make room in ourselves and in our idea about the world and our knowledge of who we are so that we can receive light and healing and love and wisdom and access to our intuition in exchange. So this forgiveness process in its ecstatic version is really a trade.
Right.
It's like we say to spirit, you're vast and mysterious, and like I don't even really know, but I trust
right.
that this love is real. And here you go. Here is my sorrow and my pain. I'm going to breathe it out and lay it down. I'm laying down my burdens and offering them as a deep prayer. And once I learn how to do that, then I'll know how to do it. first of all, and I won't need to come back to somebody else, even me.
Right.
I like to empower people that they learn how to do this for themselves so that at 3 o'clock in the morning when they wake up in a cold sweat of anxiety, they're like, oh, no problem. I can handle this.
Right.
I'm going to give this entire ball of fear and loathing over to God. And I know how to do it. I'm going to do it right now. And when we do that, using our breath, using our prayer, using our trust, then there's so much room for the good stuff to come in. And the more layers we take off, I like to say that we're doing a striptease. It's this dance where we're letting these veils go and we just get more and more light and more happy.
Right. And that moment right there, you do a lot of work in addiction. I know from your background and seeing the work that you do. And I'm listening to you talk about this idea of higher power and trusting and giving things up and this path that people can take. And it just takes me back to a lot of ways to addiction treatment, I think. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you use this process then with people who are struggling with addiction issues in their lives?
Yes. Well, thank you for mentioning that. A few different things. One is that I have gone through 12-step myself.
Right.
So I know what the 12 steps are. And I did it as a participant in Al-Anon because my sweetheart was drinking and I didn't realize it for quite a while. And then when I did realize it, somebody said, you know, Anna, you should go to 12-step. And I thought, yeah, I should. So I ended up going through all 12 steps. And what I love about 12-step is, I know some people love it, some people don't, but what I do love about it is that the people around the addict go through the same 12 steps.
Right.
And to me, that's another reflection of how we all need to really take responsibility for ourselves so that the addict then does not become the blamed one. It's kind of like my mother could be the blamed one, the, you know, the identified patient, so to speak.
Right.
But then if we get larger than that and say, well, wait a minute, you know, what's this doing in my life? Who am I with it? And how do I heal? Then I got a lot out of doing those 12 steps. And one of the things that I realized, though, is that, yes, there's making amends, but there isn't a whole lot of focus on forgiveness as far as forgiving ourselves and forgiving others. So that's what I'm adding to this recovery work with clients. And I also want to say that I'm very interested not only in obvious addictions, sometimes they're called hard addictions or soft addictions or behavioral addictions. There's just a lot of different ways that human beings can show their sorrow and their pain and try to medicate our way out of it. And then before we know it, we're in an addiction spiral.
Right.
But in this course that I wrote, one of the lessons is about subtle and hidden addictions, which are immense. I don't know anybody who has an intact ego, which is just about everybody out of 7 billion of us, right? We're in this big human family, and we have many, many, many layers of addiction. So that the people who are struggling now, perhaps with, you know, a substance abuse issue or behavioral addiction, that's a more dramatic outpicturing of what's going on. Same dynamics at play with just about everybody, including myself. You know, I'm healing and I'm in recovery, even though I never had a hardcore addiction.
Well, this is very powerful stuff. And I know that you work with, you know, it also mentions that you work with people who are incarcerated, and there's so much there as well for forgiveness where it can be so powerful on both sides of the courtroom. And so I think it's really important that you come in and really don't just teach about forgiveness, but about personal responsibility and how they can work so well together to promote healing. That's very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. What's a tip or tool then that you can give us with all your work in forgiveness and working with so many diverse populations? What's a tip that can help us on our journeys of personal and spiritual growth?
Well, the actual process of forgiveness is a little long to go into right now.
Right.
But there are two things I would say right now. One is an acronym that I learned when I was teaching anger management and peace education in San Quentin Prison, which I did for 6 years as a guest teacher there. And I have since worked with youth in juvenile hall quite a bit. And so one of the acronyms that we use in the anger management is Q-tip, which is quit taking it personally. And I even know one of the inmates in San Quentin, he got out now, and he keeps a Q-tip in his pocket every day. He wakes up, you know, he puts his watch on, he puts his wallet in his pocket, whatever, and he puts his Q-tip in there so that he can take it out and remind himself and the people around him, hey, Q-tip, quit taking it personally.
I love that.
Yeah, and that's especially for youth and youth who are violent. They take a lot of things personally, and they can pull a trigger or pull a punch really fast.
Right.
And it can change their lives in a second.
Right.
And they can do a lot of damage and or end up in prison for the rest of their lives because they didn't know how to just take a breath and not take everything so personally. But here's the other thing that I want to say, which is about taking self-responsibility, because the other side of that is we could say, oh, well, if I'm not going to take it personally, then it means it has nothing to do with me. And that means I can just go along doing whatever I damn well please and doesn't
right.
even matter.
Right.
And that's not true either. So yes, reminding ourselves that if someone else is in a funk or having a hard time, we don't have to take it personally that it has to do with us. And we can send compassion and love instead of being insulted. That's
yeah.
a good one, because
yep.
if you really look at what happens inside of your own imagination and your own patterns of your mind,
right,
then that's where the balancing act of I need to take responsibility for myself. Everything, every thought I have is my responsibility.
That's
every single
powerful.
One.
That's very powerful.
Yeah.
And it turns it, like you said, it turns it all on its head, and it ties into ideas of karma. It ties into ideas of personal responsibility. It ties into strength and empowerment. And it all starts with this little doorway you can crack open, this doorway of forgiveness.
Mm. Yeah. And if we take it seriously that we have free will, we can choose. So
right.
we can get on this path of awakening anytime we want, and we have to re-choose it all the time. So we're free to choose it or not choose it, which is powerful.
Right.
And then we're free to let go of anything we don't want to keep anymore. Sometimes people get so, you know, they're just so upset, and they call me, and I do one-on-one sessions with people all over the world, and they'll call me and say, oh my God, this is happening. And I get the sense of the pattern of their mind.
Right.
And then I say to them, well, is there anything more you can learn from this? Oh, I don't know. Well, have you done it a million times? Well, yeah, I probably have. Okay, so you probably have a PhD in it, right? It's like, how much more can you get out of it?
Right.
And then they go, oh, yeah, okay. Well, how about today is the last day of that? How about you make room for something else? And in order to do that, we have to let go.
Right.
We don't have to add anything, because we're already the purest high vibration of God essence that is and can be.
Wow.
That's a reality of who we are. All we need to do is start taking off the layers. We don't have to fix or change. Just get naked.
Naked in forgiveness. Ecstatically naked in forgiveness.
Uh-huh. Ecstatically naked is what forgiveness offers us. And then the only thing that gets bigger and stronger is the light that we are.
Right.
And then when we're that strong in our light, then more and more we're in the flow because we're listening to our guidance, our intuition, and it'll say, oh, time to go over there. Oh, time to say hello to that person. Oh, it's time to take a rest. Don't go out and do anything. And when we're listening to that, then everything starts becoming very full of flow and full of ease and full of beauty. And then the only thing to do after that is share it.
Which was getting blocked before because we didn't have any time to do that because we were so busy holding on to grudges.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the world will try to, well, certain aspects of our world will try to trigger us all over again. It's like, wait, you don't really want to let that go, do you? Oh, I think you need that grudge over there. And you'll be without protection if you don't have your grudges.
Right.
Or you'll turn into a doormat and you'll be weak. Well, that is not true. And so that's why it takes trust to try this. Because we have had these other ideas that came from, you know, as soon as we're born and the way our family worked and everything, of, okay, you know, you need to have a wall. You need to have some place to protect yourself behind. And we do need protection, but the protection comes from this connection to spirit. It doesn't come from anything else. And that's another way of flipping things on its head.
Well, on that beautiful note of connection to spirit, I really want to take some time, Anna, to thank you for being here with us. Just thank you for sharing all this with us. There was a lot there, and I hope people do take advantage of the opportunity to choose. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
I want to remind our listeners, forgiveness may start with, it's okay. But sometimes we need to acknowledge we're not okay. We need to do more. We need to face the situation, take responsibility, and forgive, as Anna says so ecstatically, that we're not only okay, but healed and empowered. Give it a try and see what fills the space where a grudge once was. You can find out more about Anna's books, Forgive and Be Free and The Edges Are Friendly. And you can find out more about her work at www.annaholub.com. That's A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B.com. The link will be in our show notes. And she has an 8-lesson online course called Forgive and Be Free of Your Addiction. And you can get the first lesson free if you email her at info@annaholub.com and you put in the subject line, first lesson, please. It's a great offer. Take advantage of it. And you can always check out more episodes at thenobodyguidetolife.com. Reach out to us on Twitter and Facebook at Nobody's View or on Instagram at J.A. Plosker or join the Facebook community, Simple Spirituality. If you liked what you heard on this episode, please consider sharing it with someone you know, someone you think could use it. Keep practicing and have a good week.